And welcome back to Speaking of Strange, the show where the unusual becomes usual. I am your host, Joshua P. Warren, and what an hour we have for you tonight. I've been looking forward to this for a while. Nick Pope used to run the British government's UFO project at the Ministry of Defense. At first doubtful, his investigation of newly reported UFO incidents and access to government files on the subject soon convinced him that the phenomenon raised important national security issues, especially when the witnesses were military pilots or where UFOs were tracked on radar. Nick also looked into other mysteries, such as alien abductions and crop circles, and he now continues his research in a private capacity and is recognized as a leading authority on UFOs and the unexplained. He has done extensive media work, has lectured all around the world, and has acted as a consultant on several TV documentaries. His website is nickpope.net, and it's a great honor to say, Nick Pope, welcome to Speaking of Strange.
Thank you very much. It's good to be on the show.
Well, I've wanted to talk to you for so long because your experience is vast. There is so much we could cover, so let me just start right off the bat with saying, you know, if you would please give us an overview, where does the world stand right now when it comes to understanding the UFO phenomenon?
Well, I think that there is an unprecedented level of both media coverage and interest in this subject at the moment. Many people have different beliefs about the true nature of the UFO phenomenon. Some people are skeptical, some are believers. But wherever people stand, there's seemingly no getting away from the subject at the moment. I've been involved in an almost unprecedented amount of news shows, documentaries, chat shows, all sorts of media features on this in recent months, including some fairly big shows such as America's Newsroom. So there really is massive interest. But we, having said all that, of course, it's still a mystery. We haven't got what you might call a smoking gun that's resolved it. Hence, I guess, the fact that we're still discussing and debating it.
Now, there is this perception that there are mysterious, dark government organizations out there hiding evidence. There is some vast conspiracy, and you hear civilians talking all the time about how frustrating this is. Is that perception, in fact, an accurate one? Or having occupied both roles, do you think that the government really doesn't know that much more than we do?
I think the latter is the case. I obviously can only speak with any direct authority about the position in the United Kingdom. The position in the States may be different, though I'm actually fairly doubtful of that. I can say with hand on heart that here in the UK, there isn't some great cover-up. There's not a conspiracy to keep the truth about UFOs from the public. And as you put it in the question, the truth of the matter is that those of us who were looking at this issue were as puzzled and frustrated at our inability to resolve this issue than anyone else. The bottom line is, yes, we got lots of interesting sightings. Most of them we could explain, but a percentage of them we couldn't and were very interesting, and I'm sure we'll discuss some of those cases later in the interview. But, there is no spaceship in a hangar type smoking gun that's going to reveal some great extraterrestrial presence. And I'm convinced that certainly I had that combination of the need to know because of the work that I was doing and the security clearance that had there been information about an extraterrestrial reality, I would have been privy to it. And I was never, in the course of my tour of duty on that project, never got even a hint that anyone else was guardian of some great secret.
So why did you feel that this issue is of national security concern?
It was a matter of logic to me. It seemed that if there were, and as is, I believe, now indisputable from not least records being declassified by the Ministry of Defence. And again, I'm sure we'll talk about that because that's a big story at the moment. But if there are things in our airspace and they are structured craft, they are seen sometimes by commercial airline pilots and Air Force pilots. If sometimes there are near misses between aircraft and UFOs, and if on occasions these things are tracked on radar, which they are, all of those things are not disputed. If that's happening, it seems to me that whatever one believes about UFOs, one must take it as a defense, national security, and indeed an air safety issue. And that's my belief. So I think the UFO issue, whatever the nature of the phenomenon, is important and does deserve to be looked at properly by government, the military, and indeed the aviation community.
Now, is it true that the UK has been involved in direct combat situations and engagements with UFOs for 20 years, and every mission dispatched was sent out with shoot-down orders?
Well, I was reported as making remarks along those lines, but perhaps I can clarify what I actually said. What I was saying was that over the years, and I'll mention a few specific cases, but over the years there have been a number of occasions where, having received authorization from their chain of command, military pilots have either opened fire or attempted to open fire on a UFO. Now, one of the best-known cases is that of Parviz Jafari from Iran in 1976, where there was an incident where he was scrambled, he moved to intercept this UFO, and he attempted to fire an air-to-air missile at it. But before he could fire, his weapons system it went offline. We don't know whether that was a coincidence or whether it was something to do with the UFO, but everything else worked, except he lost the ability to fire his weapons. There was another case from Peru in 1980 involving Comandante Huertas. He did open fire with a machine cannon on a UFO which had infringed into restricted military airspace. He said the rounds, he was convinced he hit the object, but they were absorbed, as he's put it. And there was a case over England in 1957 involving a pilot called Milton Torres, who was actually a United States Air Force pilot on exchange, but he was flying a mission. He was scrambled and ordered to intercept a UFO that was being tracked on radar, and he was ordered to open fire on it, but the UFO disappeared before he could do it. So what I was trying to do in my various media interviews on this was put those cases together and say, well, what does that tell us? Where do we go from here?
Well, you know, given the national security significance of these issues and some of the controversy around them, was there ever a time when you were asked or persuaded to be deceptive in your role as a member of the Ministry of Defense?
Well, the Ministry of Defense is, of course, by its very nature, an inherently secretive organization. And bear in mind, when I was doing this job in the 1990s, of looking at UFOs, Britain did not yet have a Freedom of Information Act. So although some UFO papers had been made available at our national archives, they tended to be ones dating from the 50s and the 60s. There were certainly occasions where I obviously wouldn't go into details about something if asked by UFO researchers and things. But again, that's because the default position on this was to say as little as possible, and indeed to play down the subject. To give you an example, I did not at the time, because their role had not been publicly acknowledged, I never mentioned the fact that my investigations included liaison with the Defense Intelligence Staff. That's the sort of information that was not shared with the public.
You know, I was out in Nevada last month at the International UFO Congress, and at one point I was invited to go out into the desert with some guys who had these sophisticated third-generation night vision goggles and just observe the sky. And at one point myself and two other fellas saw this enormous V-shaped formation that passed over us. It was heading toward Nellis Air Force Base that may or may not have relevance. And according to the night vision experts, because of how it appeared, it seemed to be so high up in the sky that it was probably on the edge of space, if not in outer space, and you couldn't see it with the naked eyes. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but do you think that there are actually some secret space-based craft that governments are employing or deploying, perhaps even to defend us against some possible alien invasion?
Well, I'm not sure about defending us from alien invasion, but I think any aviation expert, any military expert will tell you that, of course, there are prototype aircraft and drones being flown that you won't see at the big public air displays, or you won't even get public acknowledgement of for many years. I mean, I think that's taken as a given. I mean, the classic example is, of course, that aircraft such as the stealth fighter and bomber were clearly flying years and years before they were publicly acknowledged, and I think one can say the same with aircraft like the Blackbird, the U-2, all these sorts of things. So I'm sure there will be things out there, I'm absolutely certain there are, that won't be publicly acknowledged for a long time. Now, whether these sorts of things explain what you saw, I don't know.
I've always felt that if a government wanted to carry out some type of a secret operation, say, on civilian property, and they had men running around in black suits and camo, and people saw them and freaked out and called the cops, it would become a big deal. But if all the guys just put on alien masks, then everybody who called the cops would be told, yeah, you're crazy. Do you think sometimes these myths and stories about the UFOs and aliens actually help governments keep their operations secret by incorporating the crazy card?
Absolutely, and I've played that game myself. Certainly when I was in the UFO project, and when we were dealing with, for example, inquiries from the media, the press office would use lines which were carefully scripted to downplay the subject, and occasionally, of course, to put a little bit of ridicule in. So even though the term flying saucers is not used much these days, people tend to talk more about UFOs, but it sounds a little quaint, and it probably sounds quirkier these days. So sometimes we would deliberately slip the use of the phrase flying saucers in and say, well, I'm sure people do see flying saucers, but we believe that there are explanations for these sightings. And occasionally we might use a phrase such as UFO spotters, again, to try and portray the UFO community, as it were, as slightly quirky and unusual.
Okay, well, we got to take our first break here. And, folks, I'm talking with Nick Pope. His website is nickpope.net. Fascinating man. He worked for years for the British government and knows more than anybody about the UFO phenomenon in that country. When we come back, I'll talk with him about these declassified records that have recently come to light from the UK. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of... I am your host, Joshua P. Warren. This is Speaking of Strange, and I'm talking this hour with Nick Pope. He used to run the British government's UFO project at the Ministry of Defense, and now he is a civilian and was so fascinated by what he found that he has continued to research this subject on his own. His website is nickpope.net, and again, that's N-I-C-K-P-O-P-E, nickpope.net. So, Nick, tell us about some of these declassified British records that have recently come to light.
Yes, well, what's happened is this. At the very end of 2007, the Ministry of Defence made a policy decision that it was going to release its entire archive of UFO files. Hundreds of files, literally tens of thousands of pages of documentation. There were several reasons for that. Firstly, the French government had released their files, so that set a precedent that it was increasingly difficult not to follow. Secondly, the Ministry of Defence felt that it would be a good way to maybe defuse some of the conspiracy theories, and that it would be a good story about open government and freedom of information and be a good example of their commitment to it. The third reason is the most interesting one, I think. The MOD had been getting so many Freedom of Information Act requests that dealing with them on a case-by-case basis was becoming a massive workload. The MOD received more FOI requests, and still does, on UFOs than any other subject, including the wars in Iraq or Afghanistan. So they simply decided that if they released the archives, once that was done, all future FOI requests could be met with a one-sentence statement that all the records are at the National Archives. So that was the background to it. And there have been three releases to date, the first one in May 2008, the second one October 2008, and the third batch literally in the last few days. So as with the previous batches, these new files, it's a mixed bag. A lot of the material is quite mundane and clearly is just people misidentifying aircraft lights, satellites, and all the usual things. But there are some more interesting cases, too.
So, in all of these cases, is there ever a record of one of these craft actually firing on us?
No, not in these papers, no. But there are certainly some cases which make you think. I mean, again, in this new batch of files, there's one case where an Air Force pilot, an instructor with a student in the back, saw something which they could only really describe as a missile. Now, maybe it was a missile, but we tend to know when those sorts of things are fired off. And they certainly saw an explosion. So if it wasn't a missile, what was it? Having said that, they at no time felt that the thing was too close to them, and certainly they didn't feel that they were being targeted. But there's certainly been some near misses over the years, and another couple of interesting cases happened just last year. Two separate incidents involving police helicopters in near collision with a UFO, one case from Wales and one from Birmingham. And the Birmingham case, in that instance, the pilot had to take evasive action. So again, I'm not saying that there is hostile intent, but there is certainly a serious issue here.
Now, if when you were at the Ministry of Defense, officials had come in and said, Nick, you're not going to believe this. We've got a crash saucer here. They're aliens. The whole Roswell scenario has played out in the UK. What would the protocol have been for you and how this would have been handled?
I think the first decision would be, could we and should we keep this quiet or not? And that would really depend on the circumstances. But if we'd managed to recover some craft without it coming to public attention, yes, I could certainly see a strong case for not making a public announcement, certainly not until scientists had studied it and got a clearer idea of what we were dealing with. But just to give one example, obviously the British Ministry of Defence would want to ensure that any technology derived from this, certainly in the first instance, was incorporated into British military equipment, British defence contractors, and indeed non-defence applications of this technology. We would have, of course, wanted, for all sorts of political, military, and indeed economic reasons, to keep this for ourselves, I'm sure.
Did you ever see a document that said, here's what to do in case this ever happens, or something along those lines?
No, there wasn't, and I actually did have some discussions and suggest that there should be, but I think we decided that it would almost be too sensitive to even commit to paper. But I think, inevitably, the initial protocol, certainly if we... I mean, all these things are going to be events-led. I mean, it depends whether you deal, for example, with a crash in a public place or somewhere remote. It depends whether it's a crash, a landing, whatever. But there would be some commonality with the existing standard operating procedures, for example, in relation to an aircraft accident. You would cordon off the area, recover the debris, all sorts of things like that. And with a UFO incident, of course, one of the things that you'd quickly need to do is to use the sorts of equipment that you use to detect any chemical or biological hazard. You'd need to test the site with that equipment.
You know, you make a good point when you use the term too sensitive to commit to paper. Did you ever get the sense that there might be another organization out there, men who have no names, who have no titles, who could step in and really take over for you if something became too sensitive?
No, I didn't get that sense. And again, I think that if there had been such a unit... Again, either myself or my opposite numbers in the defense intelligence staff, A, we would have got a hint, and B, I think, again, I never did get the feeling that anyone was ever trying, even with the most interesting of cases, I never got the impression that anyone was trying to get the data for themselves or keep me out of an investigation, stop me getting access to any information I wanted. I never once felt that that was the case.
What kind of, you know, monitoring and surveillance do you have to be subjected to sit in such an important seat where, you know, one statement that you make on behalf of the government can cause havoc you just make a mistake, you slip up, you say something the wrong way? Did you feel like that you were sort of being surveilled all the time?
Not particularly, but inherently. I mean, I served for 21 years in the Ministry of Defense, and my time investigating UFOs in the early 90s was by no means my first post. I'd been in the department since 1985, so I was well aware of obviously the need to be discreet in everything that I said. And of course, the other point is that, like all Crown servants, I was subject to the Official Secrets Act, so I knew that... And was very well versed in making sure that only unclassified information was ever discussed publicly, say with UFO groups or the media.
You know, there are two basic schools of thought out there regarding these craft. Some people believe they are just nuts and bolts machines that may have come here from another rock out there in the cosmos. Others believe they might have more of a non-physical makeup. They could be something similar to a plasma, or at least part of the time, they can sort of switch back and forth between physical and non-physical craft. How do you feel about that?
Well, of course, the answer might be that some are nuts and bolts and some are plasmas. So I don't think the two theories are mutually exclusive. And yes, the Ministry of Defense certainly dabbled with the idea of atmospheric plasmas explaining some of these cases. A couple of years ago, the Ministry of Defense released a secret study. Well, at the time, it had been classified secret UK eyes only, and it was an analysis of the UFO phenomenon. It's on the MOD's website, by the way. And so like all the material we're discussing, obviously, I'm discussing things which have been declassified. But this study did speculate that some sort of exotic atmospheric plasma may be involved. And we used, by the way, we banned the use of the word UFO because we felt it had too much baggage, and we replaced it with UAP, unidentified aerial phenomena. And there's one very interesting recommendation in this report, which is commonly known as the Condyne Report. And it says that aircrew encountering UAP should take no action aside from trying to place the object to the stern. In other words, whatever these things are, don't mess with them.
Yeah, so it really, the idea of combat probably would not be realistic anyway with these. And you don't want to start shooting at something if you don't know what it is, I suppose, right?
I think that's right, which is why the three cases that I mentioned earlier in the interview, Parviz Jafari, Comandante Huertes, and Milton Torres, it's why those cases are interesting, because obviously to open fire is usually the option of last resort, and I think there are some very interesting questions, maybe questions that still need to be asked, about just what the thought processes were before giving the authorization to use lethal force. But yeah, it's certainly not something that I would recommend unless there was a situation where a pilot genuinely felt that his or her aircraft was in danger, in which case I think self-defense is a legitimate concept. But yes, the secret report that I mentioned, certainly the MOD said there was no evidence of hostility, and certainly didn't recommend hostile action. As I say, the recommendation was really just try and avoid the things, whatever they are.
Okay, we have to take our next break, and when we return, I will continue this conversation with Nick Pope. I'll ask him if he has ever seen a UFO, or as he might call it, a UAP, and we'll also dig a little bit more into this idea that some government out there might be hiding something, or are the conspiracists correct when they say this is a big plot for a one-world government to take over, uniting us all against a common enemy? So many different angles to look at when you explore this subject from a defense perspective. And, of course, Nick Pope, he spent years running the UFO project at the Ministry of Defense for the British government. His website is nickpope.net, N-I-C-K-P-O-P-E, nickpope.net. And we'll continue this discussion on Speaking of Strange right after this. Strange. Back to Speaking of Strange. I am your host, Joshua P. Warren, continuing my conversation with Nick Pope. He used to run the British government's UFO project at the Ministry of Defense, and he's telling us now, as a civilian investigator, everything he learned. And, you know, I think that the government may be just as confused by all of this as we are. And Nick, do you think it's conceivable that the United States or some other country does have the answer to so many of these questions and has been able to keep it secret from the UK and the rest of the world?
I certainly can't rule that out, and I suspect that if the answers lie anywhere, and they probably do lie in the United States. Obviously, if that's the case, I'm disappointed that they haven't shared the information with us, as traditionally the closest ally. But I can understand, for the reasons that I discussed earlier, why the US would perhaps want to keep for itself the secrets and try and incorporate them into the military-industrial complex if we'd actually recovered one of these things, which of course many people believe is the case at Roswell. So yes, I certainly can't rule that out, but I have no direct knowledge that's the case. And of course, you're right, secrets can be kept. I mean, people say secrets can't be kept. That's nonsense. One can think to the Manhattan Project, which obviously involved thousands of people and all sorts of installations, and that was kept a secret. The breaking of the German codes during the Second World War, of course, something that stayed secret certainly for, as I recall, about 20 years after the end of the Second World War, until that emerged, and of course things that we don't know about. So secrets can be kept, yes.
To your knowledge, at least in the UK, how much effort, if any, was put into keeping tabs on the civilians who were doing research? Were there ever agents put out there at UFO conferences, or was there any concern that maybe some private group knew things that the military needed to know?
Funnily enough, in the latest batch of UFO files to have been released by the Ministry of Defence, and you're the first person to get this little exclusive, but you asked me the question. One of the documents is a little compliment slip with my handwriting on, and it says, I went to the Quest conference, usual fare, but lots of talk of F-117, B-2, etc. So I actually did once attend a UFO conference, obviously without letting on who I was. But my reason for doing that was of course to listen to the information about UFOs, but particularly to see if people were discussing sensitive aviation projects, and there was huge sensitivity at the time and huge controversy about whether the US government was flying something codenamed Aurora, supposed hypersonic replacement to the SR-71 Blackbird. So I wanted to see what these people were talking about, what they knew, what they thought, so I went along, and that's just been revealed in the files. And it was funny because, of course, I remember very well the host of the conference standing up at the very beginning and welcoming people and saying, and I also extend a welcome to those people from the government, and we know that they come who are here today. And of course, on that occasion, he was right. I was.
That's interesting.
Having said that, generally speaking, there is no monitoring of the UFO community, with one exception, and it's a fairly understandable one. When certain UFO researchers, as they do, start, for example, visiting Air Force bases and taking photographs with long lenses and things, inevitably then they come to the attention of the authorities, because of course we are not to know what their interest is. Clearly, with terrorism and with espionage in mind, if people are paying attention, if civilians are, effectively trying to spy on what's going on at military bases, of course we will, in those circumstances, investigate and keep tabs on them. So there has been some monitoring of the people in the UFO community over the years, and one or two of them have even been arrested outside military bases until we were able to ascertain who they were and what they were doing.
How do you feel about the abduction phenomenon, the idea that people are literally being taken away by some of these beings?
Well, that's interesting. I've looked at many cases where people have made these claims, and generally speaking, with these people, and this has been backed up by a couple of scientific studies, both in Britain and in America, certainly there doesn't seem to be any evidence of any psychopathology with these people. So they're not mad. Neither do they seem to be attention seekers or people just trying to sell a story. And it's interesting that out of the 100 or so people that I've met and interviewed over the years claiming these sorts of experiences, only a handful of them have ever spoken out in public and to the media. So they're not mad. They're not attention seekers. Whether they've literally been taken onto a spacecraft and had some sort of medical procedure carried out on them, as many allege, I don't know. I mean, it may be that we're dealing with some sort of psychological phenomenon. There's, of course, the complicating factor that many of these cases are brought to light using regression hypnosis, which is a controversial technique, and certainly not one that the scientific community believes is reliable in terms of recovering lost memories. So it's a difficult one. I mean, it may be that the answer is that there's something going on, but we don't even have a label for it yet. We don't even have a word for it.
You know, in the 1980s, President Ronald Reagan made a speech in which he said something to the effect that maybe it would be beneficial if we all united behind a common enemy. And he used the word, I believe, alien as an example of this. And that got a lot of people thinking that perhaps someday some of the most powerful governments in the world will conspire to create the idea of an alien threat that will scare people into submitting to this sort of one world governmental structure. That is a very grand scheme. How realistic do you think it is that whether or not there is an alien threat, this one day could be used for that purpose?
I think it's tenuous, but having said that, I've been accused of being part of this myself, not least with my recent media interviews on shows like America's Newsroom on Fox News. But my view is that, yes, there is some logic that if one was speaking hypothetically, as Ronald Reagan said, if we faced some alien threat from beyond this Earth, and I believe he used the phrase, I like to think how quickly we would set aside our differences. Whether that would result in a one-world government or not, I don't know. I'm very suspicious of a lot of these one-world government, New World Order conspiracy theories. Actually, if anything, one sees a fragmentation with countries falling apart rather than coming together, I think. And, you know, one only has to look at the breakup of the Soviet Union, Yugoslavia, to see that. That push almost for independence and smaller units. Yes, I've heard the phrase false flag alien invasion used. If you Google that term, you'll find a lot of material. You'll find a lot of people who believe that it's going to all come together in 2012. People are linking it with Mayan end time prophecies. It's interesting, but I don't really buy into it.
Have you ever seen one of these UAP yourselves? Yourself?
I haven't. Yeah. Sad to say, the closest I came was actually this Christmas. Last Christmas, I was in the kitchen, I think, and suddenly there was shouting and screaming and people calling for me to come outside, and we went out into the courtyard and people were pointing up in the sky and saying, look, look. And what it was quite obvious to me. It was one of these Chinese lanterns, one of these little fire lanterns that people let off. And yes, of course, it looked very spectacular, but not least because of the job that I did. I guess I'm probably the last person on the face of the earth who's going to misidentify something.
You know,
so, no, sadly, I've never seen anything. Of course, I would love to. I would love to see particularly one of these massive triangular UFOs that so many people have seen in America, in Belgium, in the UK.
Well, go outside Laughlin, Nevada with some night vision goggles one night, and you might see something like I saw last month. It was really quite amazing. I don't know what it was, but you know, it was something that was not supposed to be there. Okay, well, let's see here. There seems to be a sense out there that activity is increasing, and it could simply be because more people are running around with cell phone cameras, and the Internet allows us to exchange more information. Do you feel that there is an increase in UFO sightings around the world?
It's very difficult to say, and I think you're quite right in your question to pose the question of whether things like cell phones with the ability to kind of take photos and videos, whether the internet, particularly sites like YouTube, where if you put in the phrase UFO, you'll be busy for a long, long time if you try and look at it all. That the media plays a part in fueling public interest, and it may be that encourages people who otherwise wouldn't have reported something to speak out. Traditionally, I think a lot of people have feared ridicule, disbelief, or they haven't even known who to contact. So the media plays a part. On the other hand, the Ministry of Defence a few weeks ago released the figures for numbers of sightings reported to them in 2008. It was 285, not a huge figure, but then not a lot of people in percentage terms who see a UFO maybe reported to the MOD, more report to the media these days. But that 2008 figure was more than double the figure for 2007. And certainly I checked back through the figures, and sightings last year were at certainly a 10-year high. But it's a very difficult argument to say, are there genuinely more sightings, or does media coverage of this, particularly in the UK, where of course the release of the UFO files has made this a little bit more respectable than it maybe was a year or so ago, because people are seeing that the Ministry of Defence took this seriously, that pilots see these things, that police officers see these things, that they're tracked on radar.
Okay, we have to take another break. When we come back, we'll have a few more minutes left with Nick, and I want to ask him a couple questions if we can squeeze them in. I'd like to ask him, what is the single best piece of evidence, and also, what can we as civilians do to help further our understanding of these things without relying on the idea of some government disclosure? His name is Nick Pope. His website is nickpope.net. And he has been studying UFOs for a long time. He used to run the British government's UFO project at the Ministry of Defense. We'll wrap up our conversation with him right after this on Speaking of Strange. And welcome back to Speaking of Strange. Joshua P. Warren here, wrapping up my conversation with Nick Pope, who used to run the British government's UFO project at the Ministry of Defense. And Nick, a couple last questions for you here. What do you think is the single best piece of evidence that we should take the UFO subject seriously?
Well, I think the Bentwaters incident, the landing of a UFO in Rendlesham Forest in the United Kingdom, is a very interesting case. Multiple witnesses, physical evidence, a paper trail of documents, both from the United States Air Force and the Ministry of Defense, including a Defense Intelligence Staff document which assesses radiation levels taken at the landing site as being significantly higher than background. People can make an FOI request to the Ministry of Defense for that case file, and I've put some of the more interesting documents from it on my own website.
So now, without relying on government disclosure, what do we as civilians need to do to help further our understanding of these interventions and interactions?
Well, I think people can get involved perhaps with an organization like the Mutual UFO Network. MUFON are always on the lookout for new field investigators, because at the end of the day, this is a fascinating subject, but we need the people to do the work on the ground to gather the information, investigate, and then publish some findings. I'd also recommend the Coalition for Freedom of Information as a very good resource for this subject. It tends to focus on accounts from people who are either in the military, the government, or the aviation community, who have either seen a UFO or been involved in official investigations. And again, the Coalition for Freedom of Information is actually the only organization that I'm associated with as a consultant. I tend not to get involved in the UFO lobby generally, but this was impressive as a way of getting some of the best testimony into the public domain.
And we have about a minute left. By the way, how do you feel about the so-called disclosure movement, Nick?
Well, I speak at some of their conferences, but I think those people who organize them know that I'm not comfortable with a lot of their beliefs. I don't believe that the government knows about this and is covering it up, and I certainly don't believe that there's contact that we've made. But these people are, big enough to put on the platform people who don't necessarily share all their views. So I think we agree to disagree about some of the material.
Well, Nick, given your background, thanks so much for being now a civilian who is willing to do these interviews and to help the public understand, because there is so much confusion out there, so much misconception, and it's just been wonderful to have you on the show. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Folks, Nick Pope is his name. His website is nickpope.net. And in fact, he will be at the XCon next month. We keep hearing about a lot of wonderful speakers who are going to be there. Stephen Bassett's event. So please check out the X Conference. And his website, nickpope.net, has got all the information that you will need to get started learning more about his work. That's going to do it for the show tonight. I am Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, the program where the unusual becomes usual. Don't forget to join us at speakingofstrange.com, where you can also sign up for our free e-newsletter at the site for the latest updates. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren.